Capitalism, though he admitted it was, as all Marxists did, was historically progressive, was, Bukharin argued, like most Marxists argued, cruel and brutal. It was driven by, in Bukharin's words, conquest, enslavement, robbery, and murder. Socialism couldn't act that way. Socialism was to be transformative and uplifting. Different ends, therefore different means. Now, throughout the 1920s, the party debated all of these questions with enormous consequences, as I'll describe in more detail next time. The left first was defeated, pushed out of the party leadership and the government, and the alliance, by an alliance of Bukharin's followers together with Stalin. Trotsky was expelled from the party. He was then exiled to Central Asia. And in 1929, he was thrown out of the country as a whole. Then Stalin, who controlled the whole apparatus of the party, as you'll see, turned against Bukharin and forced him and the right wing out of party leadership. We'll look at Stalin and his methods next time, including the deadly results for both sides of this debate, both Trotsky and Bukharin personally and many of their followers. First, though, it's useful to briefly remember what's going on outside the party at this time. In part, as we've already seen, Soviet society in the 1920s was a continuation of the old Russian life. Old forms of business, private enterprise, old forms of pleasure, ranging from decadent cafes and cinemas playing Western films to nightclubs and casinos, crime and corruption, poverty, as well as progress, an increasing return, but also increasing inequality. However, society in the 1920s was also a site for continued idealism about making a new society. In particular, as during the Civil War, there were experiments to transform everyday life, to create a new society and new people. For example, many people, especially young people, organized communes where they lived together, they cooked together, they ate together, they sometimes raised children collectively, and insisted on absolute equality between men and women, and in many cases, complete freedom in intimate relations between men and women. An echo of the idealism of the 1860s became very much part of 1920s practice. Many individual women also were active in the movement to acquire complete personal freedom, to love whom they wish, to raise children without a spouse if they wished, to work at any job they wished. And in fact, the party encouraged this sort of idealism, this sort of women's movement. There was extensive experimentation in all sorts of fields, city planning, education, the organization of life in factories. In fact, a rather typical experiment of the time was a thing called an orchestra without a conductor. This was a very good orchestra. It traveled around the country that lacked a conductor. They felt that a conductor was a symbol of old-fashioned authoritarianism, and they were to be a collective, to be free. This was a characteristic experiment of the 1920s, part of what society, as well as many communists, were seeking. Or another case, perhaps the most bizarre movement of the time, but really quite typical, was a movement known as Down with Shame. These members of this movement believe that the only clothing that was truly egalitarian, truly free, which is what the whole revolution was supposed to be about, was no clothing at all. They believed, in fact, further, that it was only shame over the naked body, Philistine values, that led people to wear clothes. And so they demonstrated this emancipatory ideal by going naked in public, to be sure only in the summertime. It's very cold in Russia in the winter. In fact, by 1922, which was the high point of this movement, there were evenings of the naked body in major cities, nude marches through the major capitals of the Soviet Union. There was even a famous case in which trolley cars were occupied by a bunch of naked people from the movement wearing sashes that said nothing but "Down with Shame." They were arrested, needless to say. The police weren't so impressed. However odd these little stories may seem, these movements, they were no less part of the diversity of the Soviet experiment in the 1920s. And it's no wonder that once Stalin began his dramatic new revolution at the end of the 20s, many began to look back to the new economic policy period as a golden age of multiple possibilities and imagination and vision and freedom and open debate. This debate was slowly stifled in the 1920s and silenced altogether under Stalin. And it's to Stalin who we'll turn in the next lecture.